Always Changing Lives, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with unforgettable, ever-insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys. As we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves, the I Am, and the world in which we live, always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with tonight's special guest, Foster Gamble, the producer of the movie Thrive and its online presence, thrivemovement.com. And now your host, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am so excited about tonight's guest and what he has done. I know this film, Thrive, has been so many years in the making on so many levels, but in the actual making of this film, and it'll be interesting to find out how things have evolved in that time, but most importantly, how we're going to evolve in this time. And it's interesting, I got to watch the film actually a couple times because I was that interested in it, and also took notes, not just because I was going to have the pleasure of interviewing Foster today on the show, but because I thought some of the things he was saying were so prophetic and so right on. And they helped, in my mind, put a plan together, at least start to align my mind with what it is that we can do. And I'm going to be talking to Foster about some of the quotes that I got directly from him as to for further explanation. But I have to say that, real quickly, in listening to the film, it reminded me of something that when I used to work for IBM years ago, it was the top Fortune 4 company or Fortune 3 company in the world. And I remember that one of the things that they taught us during orientation was that IBM believed one of its top principles, or at least Mr. Watson, who started the company, used to say that respect for the individual was the most important thing that IBM wanted to uphold both within the company and outside the company. And for some reason, that stuck with me. Two things stuck with me: respect for the individual, and every ringing phone, no matter if it's your phone or not, is our responsibility, is your responsibility at IBM. If you hear a phone ringing, you have to answer it, even if it's not at your desk. That's the way it was, at least that's how they told us it was supposed to be. And for some reason, those two things stuck with me, even though there were many other things they shared with us. And I think not only did they stick with me, but I found it interesting that I never saw it put into practice. And maybe that's what stuck with me the most, is this was something that meant so much to me. Here I was coming into a culture which believed in respect for the individual. What an interesting thought. And then here we were living out it within this culture, absolute zero respect for any individual within the company or without outside the company. I shouldn't say zero, but it was a very small percentage. And when I would bring that up, I would be looked at cross-eyed by management, saying, you know, that they would almost shiver at somebody sees us or somebody is saying we're not doing. It's an odd thing, and we'll talk about it sometime when we don't have Foster online waiting to get on, because I think it's a really important thing, and it comes up in so many words in the film Thrive. There's a respect that we don't have now, not for our individuals, not for our cultures, not for different philosophies that we are needing to have in order to move forward. And I'm so glad we have Foster with us today to talk about that. Interestingly enough, I mentioned the ringing phone. When there was a phone ringing and I started to answer them as a rookie, I was told not to by management. That's not your phone. Well, but the company philosophy, screw the company philosophy. It's interesting. It's interesting what we say, what we do, and we need to come into alignment with that. What are we really saying? What are we really doing? And what can we really say and do for the future of all of us and the world? So we're going to talk more about that when we come right back with our guest today, Foster Gamble, right after this.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. And ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays Water Systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays Water Systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back. I am Filippo, and our guest today is Foster Gamble, who is a direct descendant of the late James Gamble, soap maker and founder of the U.S. Consumer Goods Corporation, Procter and Gamble. Growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio, Gamble, or Foster himself, lived his childhood in a position of privilege and power, where he attended elite private schools and attended his collegiate career at Princeton University. Groomed to be a leader in the establishment, Gamble chose a different path. As a young man, Gamble had an inquisitive personality that led him to envision a world scenario of a universal energy source. A lifelong journey in the pursuit of knowledge, Gamble involved himself in many intellectual subjects. Discontent with the current structure of power in the world and the massive global suffering, Foster Gamble set to make a documentary that unveiled the true reality of our existence in the 21st century. That documentary is Thrive. He has since started a movement where you could learn more about it at thrivemovement.com. And he is with us today to talk about that documentary. Welcome, Foster, to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Filippo. It's a pleasure to be here.
And even more importantly, thank you for making this film. At the very least, it has started a conversation amongst so many. I know that it received so many positive reviews on 11/11/11 when it first came out. And I'd like to ask you, I mentioned this during the monologue, this took years in the making. Obviously, you've been disgruntled with the way things were for a while. What led to the making of this film, and what was the process like?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I've had a unique privilege in a sense of being able to spend my entire lifetime working on this project, because I was always drawn to film as a child, and I actually was one of the people who started the filmmaking capacity for undergraduates at Princeton when I was there. And I made a few short experimental films and then realized that I had no idea what I had to say that was important enough to spend all the money, time, technology, and so forth to make a feature-length film. But as I looked around me, this was back in the late 60s, early 70s, I was seeing that we were at the risk of nuclear holocaust. We were invading Cambodia for no apparently good reason. And we were also destroying the environment. And I began to wake up to that the people in charge didn't necessarily have a way out of this. And so when I found out that I inherited some money, not a tremendous amount, but enough that if I managed it carefully, I could actually choose what I wanted to do with my day-to-day existence. And so I committed myself to trying to figure out what in the world is going on, and is there a way out of this lethal predicament for humanity? And I said to myself and to my friends, if I ever find that, that's what I'll make a film about. Mm. You know, and I thought it might be 10 years. Well, you know, here we are. 45 years later, or 40 since I graduated, and now this is the film that I have been wanting to make all my life, what I've been researching all my life. But my wife Kimberly and I have spent the last 8 years with a wonderful team around us making this film and website, and it's finally out in the world.
You know, it almost seems like you were born to make this film, because one of the most interesting parts about this to me is that you were groomed for to be a leader in the establishment, and here you are, in a sense, speaking not necessarily against the establishment. I don't want to say that. You can if you want. But saying that there's another way for the establishment to conduct itself. Is that a better way of putting it?
Yeah, one of my paths has also been, for many, many years, I've trained and taught in the nonviolent martial art of Aikido. So I've really been committed to not being against anything. Unless I'm, you know, actually in a self-defense situation and have to use force to protect myself. But really what I'm much more interested in is what I'm for and how we can transform our current predicament into one where everybody actually has the opportunity to thrive. And basically, when I look at the structures that we're in now, they're so destructive. They're so non-empowering to most people. And obviously, I'm not the only one to notice this. You know, you're seeing the Occupy movement worldwide now. People don't necessarily know how they're getting taken advantage of or necessarily by whom, but they know that they can't take it anymore. So they're hungry for some understanding of what's really going on and to be able to get their hands on the levers and dials where we can actually transform the world into one that can be healthy for everyone. And it fundamentally comes back to integrity. You know, if you look at the economic system, in any depth at all, you'll see a complete lack of integrity in virtually every domain, and now it's showing up in billions of lives and just tremendous suffering. And integrity is not only being honest, but it's actually being whole. And the film goes into what I call the fundamental energy pattern of the universe, this torus shape, this kind of a donut-shaped vortex, which is really the only pattern that nature uses to sustain a system, a living system. And so given that the universe does one thing to sustain itself and that our evolutionary imperative is to figure out how to have sustainable social, economic, environmental systems, it behooves us to look and be humble enough to learn from nature. And when you look at this vortex system that is the field around a seed or a person or a planet or a solar system or a galaxy, really at every scale, that wholeness is this torus system. And if we hold our economic system up to the principles of a torus, it's lacking in what a natural system has, which is centeredness, which is integrity, which is a balance of energy coming in and going out, which is an empowerment of all of its parts. These are what Elizabeth Satouris, an evolution biologist, calls the features of healthy living systems. So one of the things we're trying to do is bring forward the awareness of this blueprint of wholeness that the universe is showing us, and begging us to understand it and mimic at every level, and then help start the conversation to unpack, okay, how do human beings create their systems in a way that aligns with nature and supports everyone rather than going up against it and causing such great suffering?
You know, Foster, you bring up learning from nature, and for some reason I had this image in my mind of a dog. My understanding about dogs and their behavior is that when a dog needs to defecate, it if you put it in a cage, it will defecate to the farthest space it can. It won't where it lives. So if we look at the top dogs, the corporations, one can say they have defecated in Africa or in parts of the world, in Cambodia, whatever, that is far from them. But as I look at the world now and as it's getting smaller, it just seems like there is defecation all over the place, and excuse the analogy, but it's probably really appropriate, I feel. And it doesn't even make sense. These people that are at the helm of these corporations, they breathe, don't they? They eat and they drink. Where do they get their water and their air from if they're polluting it all around them?
Well, I think actually it's a really powerful analogy. And one of the things that I've been most struck by in my life is that in my personal life, I'm just astounded by the beauty and generosity of the human spirit. And you especially see it even with all of the poverty and illness and suffering that's going on. You see it in natural catastrophes when people who hardly have anything practically take the shirt off their back to help people around them, and it's just everywhere. So,
right. So
why are we in such a nasty predicament? And I was really discouraged for quite a while about, well, does humanity deserve to thrive? And part of the good news for me in doing this research is that the further I looked back into the source of the problem, the more I realized that actually a very few people are creating and driving the agenda, which is doing so much damage to the environment and to people's lives. You know, there's something I say in the movie is that I found out we're not a mistake. Human beings aren't a mistake. We're simply mistaken. We haven't understood what's going on. And most of the people working for the major multinational corporations and the military and the governments and so forth are just doing their job and trying to feed their kids and get by. But if you follow the money to the top of these pyramids, there are, in fact, a small group of individuals who do have an agenda, which is well documented as you start to look, to control the lives of others. And that's where we've been mistaken. We haven't seen that the failure of so many is actually a success for a few, given an agenda for taking total control. And as I've looked into it, your question about, well, you know, where are they going to get their water and clean soil and clean food and all that kind of thing? The same financial faction and the same corporations, the banking factions, Monsanto, some international governments, who are spreading GMO seeds as broadly as they can across the world and causing hundreds of thousands of farmer suicides and causing infertility in animals and human beings in the second, third generation, just taking over with really unhealthy food, the same people are funding the greatest organic seed vault in the world, in Sweden, where they've got millions and millions of organic seeds. So it seems to be, this and other evidence points to the fact that their current behavior is in order to collapse the world economy, bring in a one-world government, one-world army, one-world currency, such that they have total control, reduce the population, sometimes, oftentimes violently or covertly, to a manageable few, and then bring out the technologies and the healthy foods into a world that they are then completely in charge of. It's obviously a gruesome scenario, but it's important that we consider the possibility that this is true, so that we don't let it happen.
Wow. You know, Foster, there are times when some of the information you're giving in the film can be scary and debilitating, which is, of course, the opposite effect that we want to have. How do we get to the other side of that quickly?
Well, I really appreciate that question, because my greatest concern in creating this film was that sharing information that took me years and sometimes decades to process, I would find out a piece of this information and verify it, and it would just be emotionally devastating. You know, I would feel, like Kimberly says in the movie, like I had the flu for 2 weeks, or I would, you know, just be depressed and kind of staggering around in an altered state, and it would finally integrate, and then I get the next piece of information, and I thought, how in the world can I put all that together and dump it on people in 2 hours and have it be a healthy experience? And so I waited until I felt that the solutions were even more coherent than the problem in order to put out this film. I could have put the film out years ago if I were just talking about the problems, like a lot of media does. But what we've found, and we've been getting thousands of letters from all over the world of people just saying, thank you, I feel so relieved, I've suspected this, but now I understand it, and hard as some of the information is, I feel like I finally can get some traction and work on viable solutions. And we've found that that virtually everyone, even though the film is challenging, comes out feeling uplifted and empowered and hopeful. So I've been asking some of these people, okay, how did you integrate all that information so fast and come out feeling good about it? And the gist of what I've been learning is that the fact that it's embedded in my honoring of the beauty of nature and the human spirit, And the fact that I tie together the dots, I connect the dots of the agenda. So rather than just being random bad news, it's like, oh, here's a piece of the elephant. There's a piece of the elephant. When you stand back, you know, it's an elephant. And the fact that there are really grounded solutions, both that we can do on a large scale, but also things that you can do in your daily life that don't take a lot of time and money. The fact that all of that is brought together within 2 hours has people feeling very empowered and hopeful. And I am thrilled and relieved about that.
You know, for those who haven't seen the film, it is a Thrive, and you can go to thrivemovement.com and get a copy, see it there, have parties at home, which I know Foster is encouraging, in your communities, what have you, and spread the word, at least become aware. And it touches on all the taboos. I don't think it leaves anything out. UFOs, the food supply, healthcare, and cures that have purportedly been withheld. Energy, the energy crisis, and future energy. Education. Now, actually, education, there's an interesting one. You say in it that the captains of industry in the film, the captains of industry like Rockefeller and Carnegie, started the school system so that they could have manageable employees, an obedient and a docile workforce, and eager consumers. Can we talk more about that?
Well, unfortunately, it's true. It's very well documented, and there are a lot of good books on it, especially John Gatto's The Underground History of American Education. When the income tax came in 1913, and they started taking people's hard-earned money before you know, you could even get it to the bank, practically. The financial elite who were controlling the banking system, and therefore so many of the corporations, had to shelter their vast amounts of income. And they figured out that if they created these charitable foundations, they could not have to pay a tremendous amount of taxes, and then they could use that same money to take over things like education and healthcare. And then control the government boards, the private boards, the universities, and so forth, who are doing this. So they basically they created the National Education Foundation, which brought over the from Europe the Prussian, basically the military education system, which is basically, you know, sit people in rows, make them shut up, tell them what they have to believe, and then make them prove it on a test. And you take somebody and spend 12 years, much less, you know, 16 or more, if you're going to graduate school, indoctrinated into that education, it's very challenging to come out thinking for yourself. Mm. So you come out very well schooled, not with an education in terms of critical thinking, but schooled to believe certain things and to then fit into the system, either as a laborer or as a manager of labor for the benefit of the financial elite and their international corporation. So the key is to just recognize this and realize that our minds can be always free. And the reason all these different areas have been suppressed is because they're all connected. And as you wake up to this piece or that piece, you begin to see they all fit together, and we've got an opportunity to actually express our wholeness and come together not as a mass under the leadership of any particular party, but as free individuals dedicated to treating each other with the justice and integrity that I was referring to before, and a true education system, one that is free for people to choose their own type of education and get mentored in where their passions are, will support that rather than kind of hide and suppress it.
Mm. You know, Foster, broccoli, the vegetable, is supposed to be one of the most important vegetables, as far as I know, through the studies I've done, for our bodies. So for the sake of argument, when broccoli was broccoli, when it had all the nutrients from the soil, the minerals and everything, and vitamins and all that, and when we could eat broccoli and ingest it and have it actually serve us, then that could have been a dangerous thing to the establishment that maybe didn't want us to be healthy, as you point out in the film with some of the cures that have been withheld or healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. But nowadays, that broccoli is most of it. Most of what seems to be made has got the same nutrients that cardboard has. Now, if people eat broccoli, sure, eat all the broccoli you want. It doesn't bother the establishment because it's not going to do as much for you because it doesn't have very much in it. So in that same light, is it possible that you are not a threat, that this film is not a threat to the establishment because, as you say, because you know, say all you want, people can't hear you, people can't do anything because they're already indoctrinated into the established way of that they want them.
Well, they, as my wife says, the toothpaste is out of the tube on that. Disinformation is now on hundreds of thousands of computers throughout the world, and we kept it very low key. It's not that this information wasn't available before. We just hope to offer a new level of coherence and an efficient delivery system for people being able to take it in an effective way. And from the feedback that we're getting from people all over the world now, I think that in old-fashioned terms, it would be a threat to the establishment because if somebody's trying to centralize power and control other people's lives, this is not going to help. This is going to do just the opposite. But as you said in the beginning, these are all human beings. They need to eat. They've got children. They want their grandchildren to be healthy and live on a healthy planet. So even if they've gotten indoctrinated or entrapped or their worldview is just insufficient to a thriving world, in the long run, I'm convinced everybody inside wants to thrive. And if they were thriving themselves, they would want other people to thrive as well. So to the extent that that this film might be challenging in the same way that broccoli may be for some people, we hope that it also really delivers a kind of a whole systems-based nutrition that can encourage people to think for themselves and give them the tools to come together and be effective about turning this thing around.
Well, you know, at the end of the film, you give like three overlapping stages of solutions, you call them, and processes. And it's interesting that I wanted to take notes both for myself personally and the work that I do out in the world, and also for our interview. And so it was going so fast, I had to watch it over and over again, three, four, maybe even five times, that piece. And each time I watched it, I was taking more in and seeing the people happy and seeing everybody working together. It actually served in a way of reinforcing the possibility. And this is what I'd like to see more of all of us doing is reinforcing that. Those possibilities. And Foster, if we have a few more minutes with you, I'd like to take a 1 minute break for station identification and talk about those possibilities, if possible.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, we're talking with Foster Gamble today, and he is the producer of the film and the protagonist of Thrive. You can learn more about it at, of course, lifechangeswithfilippo.com, but you can go directly to their website at thrivemovement.com, thrivemovement.com, and what a movement it is. We'll be talking more about that movement as soon as we come back right after this with Foster Gamble.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio on our show, Life Changes with Filippo. Today has the pleasure of having Foster Gamble on it, who is the producer and the protagonist in the movie Thrive. You can learn more about the movie and see it and share it at thrivemovement.com. Be a part of the movement by going to thrivemovement.com, learning more about it. You know, Foster, I've been grappling with a lot of these concepts myself personally as I look to as what we're doing here, Life Changes with Filippo, and I that means so much to me. And I think there was a time when those of us who argued back in the days of the beginning of our civilization as we know it, or at least as history right now tells us, and we know that history is not always accurate, but people used to argue and maybe throw rocks at each other or hit each other with sticks until somebody else came up with a bigger weapon, and that moved along. Well, now if we are in an argument of how the world should be run, I don't have a big enough bomb personally to scare anybody that is part of an establishment that happens to have a bigger bomb than I do at the moment. So there's got to be another thing that I'm not aware of that I can turn to. And I think within the framework of the solutions that you were giving in the film, there is a bigger bomb. It's a peaceful bomb, and it's something very special and unique. Am I right about that, the way I'm thinking about it, Foster?
Well, Filippo, really touches my heart that what you said about rewatching those three-stage solutions over and over again, because it's a part of the film that goes by very quickly for people on first viewing, and sometimes people think, oh, it was just kind of a utopian cartoon about wouldn't it be nice if everybody got along and stuff like that. It's actually, for me, the most profound part of the whole film, and we've touched into it relatively lightly in the film because there wasn't a whole lot more time to go into it, and the concepts are so challenging that we didn't want to distract people too much at first pass. But if people are interested, then go to the website and go to the solution strategies, and particularly the Liberty section of thrivemovement.com, and really immerse in this thinking, because it, you know, Einstein said we're not going to solve the problems of the world at the same level at which they were created. And what you're asking about, I think, is a lot of the kind of paradigm shift that he was referring to. And let me kind of summarize it this way. People look at the film and they talk about how far out different parts were. You know, it's got UFOs and it's got conspiracy agendas and it's got free energy devices and things like that. And those are new concepts for a lot of people. I think the most radical concept in the entire film is liberty, is personal liberty. And people say, well, what do you mean? I mean, the Declaration of Independence said, you know, all men are created equal and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and all that. I mean, it is what I've found is the only thing that everybody that I've talked to agrees with, is they don't want to be violated or have their stuff taken. And everybody agrees to that, at least for themselves. But some people think, well, other people should have their stuff taken. And what I mean is this. if everybody agrees to kind of what feels like a golden rule, if you just turn around and look at our very structure of governance itself, it's all based on taxes, involuntary taxes throughout the world. And that very word involuntary is the key. Somebody comes and takes your money, or you send it in, because you know they're going to come with their guns and take it if you don't, then when did you agree to that exactly? And yet we all were trained. One of the things that we're indoctrinated in school is that you can't live without government, and government can't exist without taxes. And so, but if the very first thing that we do in creating a society is violate everybody by coming and taking their stuff, whether they like it or not, that they've worked hard to earn, then what are our chances that we're actually going to have a just and sustainable society? Now you back up and look at this from further back, and we realize that the state, the government, the whole idea of government has actually been the greatest source of violence and human suffering in history, with over 200 million people killed in the 20th century alone, and the majority of those were killed by their own state within their own territory. So there's a question here that doesn't get asked in school, and it doesn't get asked in the major media. Now, on the other hand, as soon as I say something like that, we've been also trained to think, oh, well, he's talking about anarchy, and that would be violence in the streets and chaos and everything. No, quite the opposite. I'm not talking about no rules. I'm talking about that there are rules, just no rulers. Nobody has advantage over other people where they get to take their stuff in a way that most people don't. So the rules would be based on one primary principle that I go into the film, which is the principle of non-aggression. You don't get to hurt me and take my stuff, and I don't get to do that with you. So I think the key question that every single one of us needs to ask ourselves and then begin answering very seriously, and I see it starting to happen in the Occupy movements worldwide, is exactly at what point do you think it's okay to violate someone else? And if the answer to that is never, which it is for me, then we need to start rethinking how we structure our society. And that's what the three stages in the solutions that you're referring to in the movie are about. And the first stage is simply, you know, we're not going to get to a completely voluntary society overnight. So there's got to be transition stages. And what we recommend in these three overlapping stages is the first one is just restoring as much integrity as possible to our current system.
Right.
You know, you get rid of the Federal Reserve, which is a fake. It's robbing us. And you cut the military budget in half. It would still be a plenty safe fund for protection, if that's what it was really about. And with that money, you help restore the people who have been most damaged by the system as it is, while we're moving into the second stage, which is shrinking government to only the protection of individual rights and the protection of a certain amount of commons, like the water and the air we breathe and the frequencies we transmit communication over, that type of thing. And then there would be so much prosperity emerging out of stage one, as we're not having to pay outrageous taxes and not having to pay for wars of aggression and all that, that there would be a level of health and prosperity and creativity as people are actually able to not only own their house and their car and choose where they want to go to school, but they're able to be entrepreneurs and invest in healthy things. And I think as we did that, we would be learning about the world that we could be building in stage three, where association is entirely voluntary, where there is no state that can come and take your stuff, that can wage wars supposedly in your name and perpetrate such violence in the world. So it's a huge experiment, but to me it's the only moral path that I know that I can stand for wholeheartedly. So I'm excited about the experiment getting going to turn it in that direction.
You know, it just feels like something that whose time has come. And interestingly enough, to me, some of what you're saying is actually summarized in a quote that I got from you. But you were actually talking about free energy technologies, and I extrapolated thinking that this actually applies to the way we need to move forward. And you said in the film about the technologies that rather than smashing things together and trying to control the explosion, these new technologies rely on blending, of dancing with what naturally is. And I believe that's a great statement to how we can actually live our lives together by dancing with each other and blending naturally as opposed to exploding on each other.
I went to Princeton, and there is in the physics lab there, they have a technology called the tokamak, which the government has spent $15 billion of taxpayer money on, to try to create temperatures like on the sun, where they could fuse hydrogen atoms again with each other and create helium and tap the released energy. Mm. And it's actually the technology itself is in a toroidal form. It's a giant donut. But my understanding is that they've been unsuccessful in 15 years. And what I've actually got some articles where they describe that the atomic particles, as they start trying to crunch them together, get very unruly, and they actually won't cooperate, and ultimately they end up bursting through the steel of the sides of this thing.
Wow. And
so what I'm suggesting in the film is that if we take a whole different approach, you know, learn from the women in the world, learn to follow the dance rather than to have to dominate. If you use that same Taurus pattern, and then you simply create a technology which rotates a field in the same way that nature does, and then you tune it. I know you're a musician, so you'd understand this. When you tune it into resonance at certain octave frequencies, all of a sudden the universe cooperates, and it just starts pouring in this clean, safe, amplified energy. So they've got the shape right, but the approach, rather than trying to dominate and combust, is instead if they dance with and harmonize with, there are numerous technologies already doing this dance and pouring out this free energy all over the planet, but the powers that be have repressed them really brutally so far, and part of my effort is to bring awareness of this so that people won't stand for that anymore, and we don't have to fight wars of aggression for other people's oil and pollute the skies and our lungs.
There's a new dance in town, and I thank you for bringing our awareness to it, Foster. Here's another quote from the film that you say that I really think sums all of this up in a beautiful way. You say, "I truly believe that aligning consciously with the fundamental life energy pattern at every level, physical, emotional, mental, interpersonal, and environmental, is ultimately the art, the science, and the celebration of love, and that's what we're here to learn."
Yeah, that's the most important thing I've learned in this lifetime, and that's what I'm trying to communicate, just to show how it applies at different levels. But fundamentally, at its core, love isn't, you know, I happen to like this person, but I don't like that other person. It really is our evolutionary imperative. It's our birthright to know when we're in the experience of love, and to know when we're not. And I think it's our challenge to learn how to align with that experience of love, whether it's through technology, through economics, through interpersonal communication, or through personal health and consciousness.
I find that really beautiful and a great statement to help us move forward. And then one last one that I have to say, because I mentioned it during the monologue, that IBM supposedly believed in respect for the individual, kind of like you say our Constitution supposedly preserves the rights of the people, but there's a lot of lip service given. And here in the film you say, "Rigorously protecting individual rights turns out to be key for honoring our interdependence." It's almost enigmatic.
Yeah, well, this is one of the most dangerous misunderstandings that I've come across in my own life and in the lives of, in my experience, most people on the planet right now. And I think it's what, again, Occupy is trying to sort out in their circle discussions every night, is what is the fundamental unit of wholeness at the human level. You know, in the film we talk about when you recognize wholeness at the technological level, it comes out as radiant energy, clean and safe. When you recognize it at the economic level, it comes out as a truly free and just market of voluntary exchange where everybody can prosper. In Aikido, when you recognize that you can actually protect yourself while taking care of the wholeness of the person who's out of balance themselves enough that they would be attacking you and restore them.
Mm.
But the fundamental notion of wholeness at the human level, I was raised that the rational, kind way was the group comes first. You have to think of the whole first, and you have to sacrifice yourself for the whole. Well, it turns out that if that's true, then if the majority is supposed to rule and you're supposed to do whatever most people want, then what's the problem with the lynch mob? There's only one person dissenting, but they're hanging at the end of a rope. And one of the greatest discoveries that I've come across in studying people like Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard and other really amazing philosophers is that the fundamental unit of wholeness at the human level is the individual human. And if we start there, like I described before, and always honor the individual, then the structures don't get put in place that have the authority to wage war and take your stuff. But if those things are put in place, then we end up with people having justification and laws even and monopolies on money and force in order to go and violate individual rights. So I really invite people to think about this. This is one of my teachers that I respect a lot, Stefan Molyneux. He's got the most popular philosophical website on the internet, freedomainradio.com. One powerful thing that he said that moved me and has really been a guide for me, he says, the greatest fight in the history of the world and the world of ideas is the fight to establish a universal morality. And I think we have to find that universal morality if we're going to survive as a species on a healthy planet. And I think that may sound like an ambitious, you know, task, but on the other hand, I think it's as simple as recognizing the fundamental principle of non-aggression. And I think that's what Gandhi did. I think that's what King did. I think it was the core of the Declaration of Independence, even though it was a shot that inspired a lot of people. Though they left out women and poor people and blacks and so forth, but it had that core light of true liberty, which turns people on because we can feel the truth and the power of it. And what we're trying to do in the film and website is bring forward this fundamental core, what I call a navigating insight, for creating a universal reality and then creating systems which are not in violation of it.
Well, Foster, thank you for giving us these navigating insights, both on the radio and, of course, through the film and through the conversations that you are giving and starting. You and your wife, and I'm sorry Kimberly couldn't be with us today for personal reasons, but it has certainly been a pleasure and a fascinating discourse speaking with you today.
Well, thank you, Filippo. It's a delight to talk with you, and congratulations on your show. It's really been an honor to join the team of remarkable people that you've been interviewing.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for helping provide some of those people like Barbara Marx Hubbard, who we had on the show to talk about the film Thrive, and we look forward to helping by having even more people from the film on our show and continuing this new dance together.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise. Until next time. Ciao, ciao. We've had Foster Gamble on the show and a fascinating discourse talking about the movie Thrive. And if you want to learn more about it, of course, you always can go to our website, but you can go directly to thrivemovement.com to learn about how you too can help change the world for the better. We'll be right back with our producer, Mark Legere, for the producer's wrap right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back, and this is our producer's wrap. I am Filippo.
And this is Mark Legere.
Indeed, and we have been having an amazing conversation with Foster Gamble of the movie Thrive. Wow.
You know, I think it all comes down to the last few sentences of that discussion and what he was saying with regards to a universal morality. What's interesting to me is, you know, when you look at the movements and you follow the money, as he suggests in Thrive, and you look at past media clips that have tried to tell aspects of the story from their perspective, within that, there's a whole thread of people that believe they're doing the right thing, that are operating from fear because of the population, or from fear because of the potential of a rogue dictatorship taking over or unleashing that nuclear bomb or whatever the case may be. And so there is a multitude of perspectives. There isn't just one controlling perspective. There's a multitude of perspectives as to how this has evolved and how certain controls have been put in place. And there is different varying degrees of morality within each of those perspectives. And so that's what I really made note of is kind of where this discussion ended up. And I think he hit the nail on the head, which was, trying to achieve a non-aggressive universal morality, which those great leaders had done, and the finding a chorus where everybody can kind of let go and reset the bar for humanity as a whole.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, it seems like such a confusing time because it's almost as if, you know, a child has grown up thinking they were, gosh, to use an example that I think is more relatable. Say a child grows up in America thinking that their heritage is Italian, that they've been raised Catholic, that they know their mother and their father and their brothers and their sisters and their cousins and their culture and all that stuff. And then, you know, at 65 years old or 70 years old, someone tells them, you know, you were adopted. You're really Jewish and your parents couldn't afford you and whatever. So now you think, well, who's telling the truth? And all my life I've believed one thing. You mean you're not my parents? You mean this wasn't my religion? My heritage is really not that? This is not really my family? Everything I believed is a lie? I mean, what an identity crisis.
Well, you know, we touched upon this last week's show. You know, when you take that youthful eagerness to learn and you pour a bunch of knowledge in it, you're pouring your belief system, as limited as that may be, into that person, into that the programming of that brain, and that now becomes their operating system to make decisions and have experiences with and from. And yet they will have to operate within that until new changes come along that prove that you know, those aspects or many of those aspects that they have called fact don't necessarily or aren't necessarily the truth and don't hold water. You know, the Genome Project, I think, blew a mountainous hole into that whole way of living, way of thinking, where a number of people on either side of the black and white racial discussion were learning that their ancestry was coming from a European or an African ancestry. And suddenly now they had to reconcile the fact that their blood is combined, and can they continue to operate with a aggressive criticism towards one or the other? You know, according when the DNA is speaking the exact opposite.
And it gets to the point where, in my mind, it's even worse because, okay, so now there's a new truth, but it's not that there's a new truth now. Now there is a question. It's like, how do I know if this person is telling me the truth? I'm not supposed to believe the people who cared for me when I was sick and fed me when I was a child and cleaned my diapers and loved me all these lives. Now I'm supposed to think that they're liars. And you're actually telling me the truth over here. I'd rather not believe anything, and I don't want to talk to anybody. So what? Our government doesn't really have my best interest in mind. The corporations really are trying to hurt me. Really? I don't want to what to believe and what not. It's a confusing time for people, I would present.
It is indeed, and yet it becomes so simple. It once again points back to where we started this wrap, which is a universal morality. When you stop fighting for something, when you be willing to live from a perspective of not knowing, therefore not taking a position based on a belief system that was given to you. A quick example is my eyes started opening up after I realized that I had been given science books and told for a fact that we know exactly what the center of the earth is made of.
Right.
And then as time went on, I started realizing, well, we've only been able to drill so far into the planet, and our radar and things of that nature can only go so far into deep materials. And so to this day, I don't think anybody has actually gone down there and come back with an iron molten, you know, scoop of center of the earth saying, hey, I got it. And therefore, that fact that has become part of the cornerstone of what I believe is the, you know, the core of my physical existence in this world may not be that at all. And so where do you start and stop asking questions? And therefore, where do you start and stop believing in something enough that you got to hurt someone else in order to defend your position, which may not have any accuracy whatsoever?
Right. And you know, in these science books, I just wish, I don't remember ever seeing, from what we know right now, this is what we believe. I mean, I've heard certain people say that, but as a general rule, that's not how this information was presented to us. And so I liked what you said last week of how you're raising your child saying, you know, this is what we know right now, and let's keep our mind open to what else might be out there and see how we feel about that. And what I know to be true is the conversation we're having now, I'm very passionate about it, I believe. But I know that tomorrow we'll be having a completely different conversation about this very same thing, because it has to change, otherwise we haven't changed.
Yeah, when we find out the center of the earth is actually ice, that'll change the whole discussion.
We find out we're really Jewish, or we're really aliens, or we really don't exist, and we have avatars out there that are moving us around or something. Who the heck knows?
Exactly. Who knows? And I think that's the main statement, and that's the place that that's the beginning, in my mind, of a universal morale. It is that we all really deep down have a knowing, but yet we don't know. And there's a difference to follow your gut, follow your heart, and make decisions based on your knowing, based on what your heart is telling you, but not to the extent that you are needing to put someone up or down based on that knowing, because there isn't a factual basis for you to make those decisions on. We are continuing to learn. The minute you think you know, you stop asking questions. And the minute you stop asking questions, in my mind, you've ceased thriving.
Well, there you go. And what some of us feel is that we have not been thriving, and that there's a new or better or much more fulfilling way to thrive. And I'm so glad that we've had Foster Gamble on the show to start this discourse, or not start, but help us continue it in this vein. So with that we come to the end of this wonderful producer's wrap, and to this, in my mind, wonderful show with Excellent information. So with that, I am Filippo Voltaggio, and along with our producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Legere, and our engineer today, Doug Newsom, we thank you all for being part of this beautiful world, for being part of the positive changes we wish to see in this beautiful world, and being part of this show. And for now, ciao, everyone.